See, everybody's fascinated by infectious diseases, but we're equally fascinated by the next topic, medical marijuana. And Dr. Barlow is going to tell us about his personal experience in the legislature. He is a Republican member of the Utah House of Representatives representing District 17 since September of 2011. He graduated from the University of Utah and then medical degree from Georgetown. He is an ear, nose, and throat physician, and he is married, has six children, and is on multiple boards. And in the interest of time, you can read that later.
Thank you. Good. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. I know we're running late, so we're going to jump right into this talk. But I just wanted to ask Dr. Hartman if he knows what you call an OBGYN in a suit and tie. A defendant. Okay. But I bring that up, and basically, we should really applaud Dr. Hartman. It takes a lot of courage to really open up your life in a situation like this to help other people learn. I think we really deserve to give him a round of applause. Well, I really like this slide up here, and I think if you have not gone through the Capitol, you've missed a gem. And I really like the street signs, this crossroads, because this is really symbolic of what we're dealing with medical marijuana and, you know, its direction in the state. How I like to kind of look at this is basically there's two pathways that we can follow. And in many ways, they're conflicting. I like to call the first pathway the people's pathway or the legislative route. And the second is really the Institute of Medicine pathway. And I think understanding the examples of and experience of other states that have gone through this process is helpful to understand certainly the legislative process. And I like this billboard. For us, really the poster child is the child with the intractable epilepsy. But they play on emotion, and everybody wants to help these people. And with Colorado, it took them a couple of years to get this passed. And this happened in 2000, the first state to legalize marijuana for medical use. And, you know, the legislature was pretty concerned about this just opening up and being a runaway train. And they were pretty tight, restricting physicians to like five patients they can treat. I think they foresaw the doctor mills that might come about for them. And for about 7 years, things worked pretty well. Amazingly, there weren't a lot of people that really came in to get treated for it or receive marijuana for problems. Most doctors didn't want to get involved. And so it was pretty quiet until 2007, in that time period, when one of the district Denver judges declared part of this law unconstitutional and said you can't restrict the number of patients that a doctor treats. And that started to open up the doors. Another ruling where he, with a liberal interpretation, decided to proclaim that doctors can dispense. That opened up a Pandora's box. And then we had another a memo called the Ogden Memo by David Ogden, a deputy attorney general, sends out a memo to all the other attorney generals in the various states and recommends that they treat the federal drug laws at the lowest priority level. And that just created an onslaught of patients. So they went from a couple of thousand to about 2007, and that ruling by the judge maybe increased the patient load to about 10,000, and that grew to a little bit below 20,000. But in just an 8-month period, the patient load expanded to over 100,000 people. The door was open. And that kind of leads us to this point in Colorado in 2011. And there's a rally for marijuana. But if you look closely, it almost looks like a Wasatch Front inversion. There's a cloud over this mass of people. And if you look closely, everybody's smoking a joint. This is a marijuana party. And it's happening right in front of the Colorado State Capitol. And this leads to a form of medicine that we don't recognize. And in Colorado, they called it the Green Rush. People are looking to make a lot of money off this new industry. And you have the emergence of these clinics that appear nothing like a medical clinic that we're aware of, and these dispensaries. So doctors are making a ton of money. Quick exams, making $200 a patient, as fast as they can write that prescription. And even have advertising out on the street. Venture capital companies are formed to capitalize on this huge amount of money that's going to come from this industry. I like this following slide. At a pharmacy, hands the medicine over to the patient, the medical marijuana medicine, and he says, "I recommend taking this with Doritos and Kit Kats." I mean, there's no order to how you treat things. Most of it is just personal experience. I mean, what do doctors say when they prescribe this? Take two hits and call me in the morning? It just opened up an area that we don't understand. So the new pharmacy, is this what you see in front of me? This looks like a candy store. And many people, I think, rightly look at this and they say, well, this is nothing more than big tobacco number two. They're trying to capitalize on exposing young people to marijuana in hopes of profiting from them over a lifetime. And look at some of these products. Excuse me, going the wrong way. Here, so you have marijuana pop. I like the one up in the right-hand upper corner. I can't believe it's pot butter. Now, really? Really? I mean, who finds pot butter attractive? I mean, do you take it and use it on the maybe the marijuana bread that you see in the lower left-hand corner to increase the high that you might get from THC? You know, just doesn't make sense. And the one I like that I think the Colorado ought to use as their state candy is this, these Mountain High suckers. But don't worry, they're CBD enriched, so they can't be all that bad. So what's the unintended consequence of this this pathway that Colorado went through? And you can see this, fatalities involving drivers who test positive. You have a clear rise over the years. This next slide, if it comes up, this is from the Rocky Mountain Poison and Drug Center. And you see a very steep rise in accidental poisoning with kids. These are kids 0 to 5 years of age who take these edible marijuana treats and end up in the poison controls. The ERs have the same rise in patients. And I'm not sure why that's not going, but you know, we see the same case involving you know, states who have legalized marijuana for recreational use, have about a 40% increase in adolescents use. Now, I probably need someone from AV to come and try to figure this out. Slide. But anyway, these are some of the unintended consequences. Is someone from AV, can you? And for some reason, I have videos from someone else's presentation. Oh, you have it up on the screen. Okay. Well, You know, I'm going to come on down so I can see the slides a little bit better. And so so one thing we find out is, first, people, you know, the younger kids take marijuana, and the more regular they use it, the higher they become addicted to it. Certainly attributed to many poor outcomes with education, and you can see many of them on the site. The developing brain model has been used as an example to try to explain this, and they actually found the IQ drops up to 8%. So really, it's making a lot of people dumber. It puts them in positions where there's a higher failure rate of graduation from not only high school, but from entering college. And we have life outcomes where people are going into jobs where they make less money and also are more likely to be unemployed. Biggest concern is the addiction rate. Okay, roughly 1 in 6 teens become addicted to marijuana, 1 in 11. Again, the earlier you start this, the more frequent you use it, the greater the risk of addiction. Now, are they happy in Colorado that they've gone down this pathway? Well, as you look, the 31 cities that voted to have recreational marijuana available in their cities, 84% or 26 of those cities have rescinded that and voted to ban it. We heard the same thing when we took the testimony from people from Colorado, like the police officers. They're not happy with it. So, you know, there are some unintended consequences. Now, what's the other pathway? Well, the other pathway is the medical pathway. And we basically have some great organization. The FDA is who determines medicine under this medical pathway. And basically, they have researched this. They follow the international studies, and our studies, and they just have not found evidence to support taking marijuana out of a Schedule I class and lowering that schedule. And this is a policy that they have now. No sound scientific studies supported medical use of marijuana for the treatment in the United States. And no animal or human data supported the safety or efficacy of marijuana for general medical use. So that's kind of the dilemma we have with marijuana. So you got to fix? Okay, I'm good. I can do it from here. So so what is this marijuana plant that we have? One thing we know is it's not that pot that maybe you or your parents had in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. At that point, the THC levels were fairly low, under 2%. Now, through genetic manipulation, that THC levels in some species of marijuana, and there's hundreds of different species, are as high as 15-16%. So it's a different creature, and it's also a moving target, because even within strains of marijuana, you see variations in the levels. Now, a couple of marijuana facts that we're aware of. First of all, it's the most common illicit drug used in the United States, used by 81% of current illicit drug users. We think there is a gateway effect with marijuana, but most disturbing is the impact it's having on the youth. And you can see the 8th grade through 12th grade, very high levels of experimentation, 12% up to 35%. And most concerning is the daily or almost near daily use of 5.8%. This is kind of a busy slide, but there's a lot of the chemicals from the marijuana plant that we think might have a place in medicine, and would like to see those researched. People ask me all the time, well, hey, this is a God-given plant. I mean, how can it be bad? Well, you know, basically, the endogenous neurotransmitters that we have that fit the CB1 receptor sites or the cannabinoid receptor sites are just being hijacked by some of these plant chemicals. And you can see the amandamide molecules. This is the ligand or the neurotransmitter that we think is responsible for the pleasure we get in eating chocolate. Okay, so it's important. And here you see a THC molecule, very similar structure. They fit on these receptor sites with different rates of affinity. And with THC, it has a very strong affinity. So it's going to stay on that cell site, that receptor site, and continue to stimulate it. Whereas endogenous types of neurotransmitters will break up fairly quickly. CBD is also in the same category. Well, let me back up. But if you look at the slide on the right, you can see these high levels of concentration of these cannabinoid receptor sites up in the neocortex, a large concentration in the center of the brain, and then in the cerebellum. So what sites are these that are being stimulated? Well, they're pretty important sites. You know, it's the hippocampus, the hypothalamus, the amygdala, you know, the basal ganglia. Some pretty important structures, and this has brought a lot of interest from people who want to research these this area because of the functions that are being regulated from these sites. Brain development, memory, cognition, motivational systems, rewards, appetite, and the list goes on and on. And so researchers are jumping on. And what appears to be the shining star is cannabidiol, CBD, for a couple of reasons. Even though it's only one of more than 80 potential cannabinoids in marijuana, it has a couple of characteristics that are favorable. Probably the greatest one is it does not produce euphoria or intoxication, unlike THC. But and you can see the multiple areas in that fifth bullet point where investigators want to look at this. So what's happened, at least on the medical pathway? Well, the American Epilepsy Society has actually presented FDA-sponsored three studies on cannabidiol and epilepsy, two involving a pharmaceutical-grade quality of CBD called Epidiolex, and then one is a artisan preparation, and I'd like to present some of those numbers. So with the Epidiolex studies, 23 children with intractable epilepsy, and they had to fail three standard epileptic medications to qualify for this study. But what's good about this is you have a set medication. The same dose is being given to all people who are participating in the studies. So you can compare apples to apples. And this is what they found after 3 months. 39% of patients had a greater than 50% reduction in seizures. 3 of 5 Dravet syndrome patients and 1 of 14 were seizure-free. So there appears to be a place where these might be of great benefit. And I think in Dravet syndrome, this is a place that we ought to really be looking closely. These come in a medicine. It looks like a medicine because it is a medicine. The GW Pharmaceuticals, who makes Epidiolex, they have given this to more than 400 children throughout the United States in various clinical studies. We have the same study here in Salt Lake City in Utah. So your patients who qualify for this, you have a place where they can access some care. There's other products, Sativex, again, a pharmaceutical grade medication that combines both THC and CBD. And there are studies taking place with that. It's already available in Europe and Canada. And this is the Artisan study from the University of Colorado. Again, small numbers, 58 children. But in this, also some positive things have been found. Parents reported seizure reduction of 50% or more in 1/3 of the patient. Very encouraging. Now there's a couple of discouraging points, and you can see that with the adverse effects that occurred in half the population of patients, 47%. 21% experienced increased or new seizures. They actually got worse. And 10% suffered developmental regression, with one patient needing intubation, and they had another patient in their study that died. So these are not benign medications, you know, and we need to iron out some of these adverse conditions. But there's other medications that the FDA has approved, Nabinol and Nabilone. And this is a synthetic THC. We're hoping this helps with nausea, with chemotherapy, and also with extreme weight loss from AIDS, stimulating appetites. But again, you have a constant medication to do your studies. Now, who's on board with this? Is it being held up from the governmental programs? No. The DEA is involved. They have 209 active researchers that have been licensed to use this category or scheduled one marijuana for research and use. Out of that, 109 are already involved in some studies throughout the United States. NIH is involved. They have over 288 studies being performed across the country. So we have a lot going on already within the established pathways. And so where do we go from here? Because we certainly want to provide compassionate care and medicine, even if it involves some risk to these, especially kids and people who need it. So some areas that we might want to consider expanding is, one, the programs that are already out there, expanding their use, like the program we have in Salt Lake City, or waiving some of the strict requirements to get into some of these programs. And so I think there's a bright future, and hopefully as research continues to grow with this, that we'll have some medications that come from this plant that are effective. Now I have one other request. We need to get more physicians and medical providers involved in the legislative process. Your voice is very important to us. And I can't think of another time in history where the federal government and even the state government, as well as maybe big companies, have usurped the power from physicians in making and driving the decisions that we have in medicine. And we really need your voice. You're very important. But thank you very much. I'm sorry for the glitch. I'm told that they could not fix this until they took these slides off. So hopefully they'll get that fixed.
Well, thank you, Dr. Barlow. I'm sure there are lots of questions, and he will be available afterwards and around and about for those questions. You don't know how much Teresa beats me if we're not on time, so we are staying on time.